Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's truly a historic occasion today to have among us a citizen who has contributed so much, not only to this entire area, but to the world of ceramics and also to the world of literature, and been part of one of the great artistic movements which revolutionized the way art was considered and which today still has extraordinary resonance in the work of younger artists who are rediscovering something that was discovered almost at the beginning of this century and with which Ms. Wood was so intimately involved. Mm-hmm. To have the mother of Dada with us.
Is this it?
Is indeed a pleasure. Now, I would like to hold forth, but I don't think I'm going to be allowed to. So, Beatrice, it is yours.
Is my voice all right? Like this, all right. Now, referring to that period just mentioned, it all touched me by the name No. No is the most dangerous word in the English language, and it has absolutely changed my life. For instance, I was brought up very carefully. I was a good little girl, and I was in great revolt. My mother saw that I had a governess, that I went to private schools, and I didn't like this at all. Now, one day, I met Elisa, a journalist. She knew writers, she knew artists. She lived a bohemian life, and I was very attracted and interested. So I invited her to home for luncheon. After she left, my mother said to me, "She's common." That hurt me. That was the first no. All right, so the next time I went to see her, and she had a little apartment in Greenwich Village, and she said, "There's a young musician of 26 who's broken his leg. He's French. He's very lonely. You speak French, so go see him." So I went to see him in the hospital, and it was Varese, the musician of the avant-garde music. And the second time I went to call on him, Marcel Duchamp was there, the great painter of the nude descending the staircase. All right, Marcel Duchamp introduced me to Henri-Pierre Rocher. Rocher was a collector of art and a diplomat sent by the French government, very correct. He called on my parents twice. And after he left, my mother said, "You're in love with that man. You shouldn't see him again." I didn't know whether I was or not, but I was attracted. All right, that was her second no. So very politely he called a third time, and I said, "Oh," I was at the phone, "I'll come to see you." He said, "Oh no, I just have a little apartment in Greenwich Village. It's nothing at all." I said, "Oh, that's all right, I don't mind." He said, "No, no, no, it's not attractive." I said, "Look, I'm shopping just around the corner." I see you get the point. It was a lie if I ever said one. So I decided, and I went to see him. And I entered his very simple little room. I looked around it. And I remember there were very coarse curtains, and the sun shone through them, made them like gold. And I stood in his room, and he was a very nice gentlemanly man. He didn't quite know what to do, so he came, and he stood opposite me and looked at me. And I saw a painting on his wall, and I saw a glass of water on the table. And he wasn't saying anything. So finally I looked at him and I said, "Aren't you going to show me your etchings?" From that time on, I was never a good little girl. But it was the kind of life I wanted. He and Duchamp introduced me to the Arensbergs, and I met all the great artists of that day and had a wonderful time. I was just, I think, 22 going on 23, so I was of age and my mother couldn't say anything. Now, I'm very international in feeling. I've traveled quite a good deal, and to me, as I travel, people are the same everywhere. And in spite of having this feeling for the whole world, I love that I'm a Californian. I was born in San Francisco, and one of the reasons I love California so much is that it's kinky. And but this is very important, because new ideas come up because it's kinky. And it's just wonderful, the marvelous new ideas that come up. And of course, what I like about America, because in spite of being very international in my feeling, I think ours is a wonderful country. We're quick in friendship. We are open to new ideas. We presented many new inventions. But, and this is very serious, our athletes, our actors are getting millions, and our teachers are being cut down, and our libraries are being closed. This is very, very serious. It's putting a block on knowledge. China and other Middle East countries, not other Middle East, but Middle East countries and China and other countries are realizing the importance of education and going after it. And we are cutting down in that direction. And it worries me a great deal. Now, one of the wonders of America, however, in spite of the bad things, several years ago, Tony Prieto, who taught ceramics, I think at Mills College, he and his wife went to Europe to learn. And when he returned, he said, "Europe shares nothing. America shares." And because America shares, our craft movement has grown so wonderfully. We're doing wonderfully inventive things in craft. I have been very fortunate myself. I'm not naturally a craftsman, but I've had four very wonderful craftsmen to help me. Lukens at USC, the Natzlers, Otto, and Gertrude Natzler, great potters. When they first came to America, Gertrude Natzler would sit by me at the wheel and help me try to see what throwing was about. Then my colleagues in Ojai, Vivica and Otto Hino, they've been so generous. They're teachers. They've passed out everything. They've helped me. And I remember Toshiko Takeso, her name's hard me to say, was visiting me. She spent a day and a half helping me center on the wheel. all this sharing in our schools amongst craftsmen themselves is a wonderful thing. So the movement's gone. And of course, our museums are so important. I don't know if military-minded people, hope nobody from the SBI is here. If our military people realize the importance of museums, museums protect all the great art, the great invention, the creative efforts of man from the beginning of time. And they're our inspiration. And I think our museums are doing wonderfully now, even though we're beginning to cut down on education. I feel about the importance of craft, of bringing beauty, craft into life. One day I said to Vivica Haino, because I'm a snob about art, ever since a child I've been dragged through the museums of Europe and America, and my eyes are exposed to great art. So I said, you know, it's a mistake to teach pottery in high school. The students haven't time to make anything beautiful and important. And Vivica Haino so wisely answered, that is not the purpose. It opens them to aesthetics. And that's what right education does. Now, I wonder, we have a tremendous population in prisons, and it's growing. We can hardly house them. Why? We put the cart before the horse. We put people in prison. Why? Because they have not had right education in the beginning. And right education is the basis of everything. Now I'll end with one other idea, and then you can ask me questions. That is this. Since there is an Olympic of athletes, why not have an Olympic of ethnic and tribal dances from countries all over the world? Then people could come and meet. They'd have beautiful costumes. Friendships would be made. And I don't think we can have peace just with guns. Peace comes through friendship, and friendships would be made with all these dances intermingling and even dancing with each other, because when you touch, you don't shoot. I base this on a little experience of my own when I was in Ojai as a sweet young thing. I would go dancing at the art center. I knew all kinds of square dancing, folk dancing. Nobody cared who we were dancing with. If it was the rich rancher or a man taking care of trash, nobody cared as long as he was a good dancer. And after every month, we had a party, and all of us mixed together in friendship. That is wonderful, and something like this could happen if we had great dances. So I come back, my last word is, violence never ends with violence, and right education is the basis of everything.
Well, I do hope that there is someone from the FBI here to relay this message to the State Department. Because if the State Department, I hope that there is someone from the FBI here so that they could tell it to the State Department. Miss Wood asked me to inform everyone that her hearing was rather difficult at the moment, and so I will have to speak very loud and clearly so that she can hear what I say.
Of hearing, age, there's no getting around it. So Mr. Perot will take questions.
So if you will ask your questions clearly, and please don't make them too long, because I might forget the beginning by the time I reach the end, then I will relay them to Miss Wood. And as far as I know, there are no restrictions on any questions that you could ask. Who would like? Yes. When did you get into a living relationship with those artists in Paris? At what age?
With artists in Paris?
Yes.
I went to study art in Paris a little bit, but I really didn't meet any answers. And to answer your question the way I think you would like it answered. I was 23 in New York. Mm-hmm. And it was my mother's no that I was so really bothered by her remarks that I just broke loose and went in the direction I wanted. She wanted a different direction, social life, having married to a stockbroker. I wouldn't be here, I would have murdered him. I say this in spite of not believing in violence. My whole life changed. And I think I was very lucky because four friends did so much to help my education. Marcel Duchamp, Rocher, the Collectors, the Walter Arensbergs, and then my old schoolmate, Elizabeth Reynolds Hapgood. Hapgood was editor of Collier's, close friend of President Wilson, and Elizabeth herself spoke Russian, so she knew. This was years and years ago, before even any of your grandmothers were alive. She knew all the Russian ambassadors, Pavlova, Nijinsky, Isadora Duncan, all those people I met through my old schoolmate, Elizabeth Hapgood. So I have been very lucky.
Another question?
You fear I'll tell the truth.
Bravo. Nothing but.
How was your relationship with your mother after you broke away from her?
How was your relationship with your mother after you broke away from her?
I broke away. I was acting then in the French theater. I wasn't really too interested in the stage, but in those early years, I thought it was the only way I could earn money. And I threatened my mother to run away. So she said, if you really mean that, I'll take you to Paris. And you can study under the Comédie Française, because she thought that if I acted in French, it was safer than if I acted in America. So I was acting in the French theater. I was the ingenue. I spoke perfect French, had beautiful clothes. For 2 years, I think I did over 60 parts, but I want to act in English. And my good friend, Elizabeth Hapgood, on account of Russia and knowing so many people in the theater, I got many parts offered me, and my mother said, no, you get leading lady or nothing. Now, part of me was really a good little girl, part of me, so I was very subdued. And my spirit was being broken because she'd say, no, no, you can't do that, you can't do that. And then a woman came from Canada and said, will you come up for 3 weeks to Canada and act in the theater there on salary? And I said, yes. And that's when I broke with my home. And my mother had a nervous breakdown for 2 days, and my father said, you're killing your mother. And I said, she's killing me. And I'm the younger, and I have a right to live. And I'll always let you know where I am. Now, I should say something nice about my mother. She was beautiful and very generous, but she was in a way of thinking, you know, we didn't have radio, we didn't have television, life wasn't as open as it is now. And any mother would want a protected social life for their daughter, probably. Now, when she died in 36, I had left home then, for quite a few years. The last 3 months of her life, we became friends, and she let go of all that kind of thing that didn't interest me, and she was very wonderful and open. And the last day of her life, she was dying of cancer. She was conscious. She knew she was going that night. We joked about it, and she said, now, tomorrow, I understand there's a wonderful exhibition. Don't tell any of the others, but go see it. She knew she wouldn't be here then. She was just wonderful. So I'm very happy to be able to say we became friends at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in the back. Could you explain a little bit about bringing art to the prisons, your thoughts about bringing art to the prisons?
I think it'd be wonderful. I've always been concerned about people being in prison, but I really don't know very much. I just think it's a terrible thing that we have so many in prison. And I'm sure we could, what is called, save the lives of endless people if they had a creative outlet. But what is a young person to do? Brought up, not knowing in any way right or wrong, no compassion, seeing bing, 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 guns used all the time, no money, drugs. Why should they not steal? Now, I don't know if this has any value. It's personal. When I left home, I made a very unhappy marriage in name only. But the man, it was a disaster. And I was for quite a few years without any money. And I mean, I sold my own books to get money to eat. I know what it is to be at zero. I was not trained for the world. I didn't know how to relate to the world. But once a week, I always went back to see my parents. And they never said anything. They never blamed me from that time on. My mother said she always had a very good luncheon for me, suspecting that I was hungry, and I was. One day she said, go up to my room and get some information out of my purse. I went there. I opened her purse. It was full of money. And I had the impulse to take some. I knew she wouldn't care. She probably sent me up almost to take some. And I stood. And then something in me said, no, that is not the way to live. And I didn't take it. Now, this is just a very poor little example. But when you have no education, when you haven't read, I've read a great deal of very fine books, also a lot of trash, but I enjoyed readings. Now, you have no guide when you're a young person. Why shouldn't you steal? Why shouldn't you shoot? Why shouldn't you go to prison? But look what we're paying for people in prison instead of putting this into education. You see, I feel our culture misses the first cell, which I come back, I say, is right education. And of course, from what I know, I've never had children, so I say this with apology, but I understand that it's vital for women to love their infants, to cuddle their infants. And from what I've read, all criminals, all abnormal people, it's because they've never been loved as youngsters.
Yes.
I'd like to hear something about how she came to be called the Mother of Dada.
How did you become the Mother of Dada?